Welcome to It's About Florida, a weekly discussion program tackling the key issues and topics of interest to our state. I'm Tramell Gomes. The Florida Bar, the statewide professional organization for lawyers, has launched a program called The Votes in Your Court. It's designed to help educate Floridians so they can make better informed decisions about the merit retention races on the ballot. If you don't know what I'm talking about, don't feel bad. As it turns out, a survey by the bar shows 90% of Floridians don't understand the merit retention program and haven't even heard about it. In a nutshell, it's a way to help keep politics out of the judicial system. To break this down in more detail, I sit down for a chat with Sean Desmond, president of the bar's Young Lawyers Division. Mr. Sean Desmond, you're currently serving on the Florida Supreme Court Commission on Professionalism and is the president of the Young Lawyers Division for the Florida Bar. Is that correct?
Yes.
And in your daily life, you practice criminal defense, family law, and civil litigation here in Tallahassee.
Right here in Tallahassee. I've been practicing now close to, it seems crazy, but close to 12 years. And I've been a prosecutor. I've been a defense lawyer. I've done civil work, family law, and now I have my own private practice and serve my clients as best I can.
All right. So welcome. We're here to talk about merit retention. What is merit retention?
Well, merit retention, it's an important thing that people be made aware of because it's kind of – It flies under the radar a little bit. Not everyone knows or really understands what merit retention is when it comes to the legal system. Merit retention is the system by which the voters of Florida have an opportunity to decide whether to retain judges or the justices. And this is only relevant to appellate court judges. So your trial court judges that hear your criminal cases and your county court judges and all that, they stand for election and they can have an opponent run against them. And so they'll be campaigning and that sort of thing. But the appellate court judges and the Florida Supreme Court justices, they are subject only to merit retention. Mm-hmm. So you can't, for instance, I can't say, you know what, I want to be on the Supreme Court. I'm just going to run for it. You can't do that.
So, why not?
Well, it used to be where the governor years and years ago would appoint whoever they wanted, you know, and that was an interesting process because governors over the years would just appoint their buddies to the court and say, well, okay, my buddy who I've been hanging out with for the last 10 years, I think you'd make a great judge. And they just put him on the bench. And over time, that system was recognized by Governor Reuben Askew as flawed. And it was a real interesting moment in our time where he actually gave up that power. And that's a significant point in time.
He gave up what power?
The power to just appoint people mm-hmm. without some mechanism to vet them. In other words, he created the judicial nominating committees. And what that does is we select a group. He created a group of people that have to vet the qualifications of a judge or justice and then present to the governor those names that have been qualified or deemed qualified by that group to be someone who would make a good judge or justice. And then the governor would then appoint out of that group. So it's a little tougher. You can't – and they can still be someone who's friendly with the governor. Mm-hmm. But there's got to be some other group that says, yeah, they're qualified as well though. So that's kind of how that – the genesis of that system. And by the way, since 1971 and the early 70s when this system came into place, that system of judicial nominating committees has become more and more defined. You know, there's a rules committee of the Florida Bar that continues to improve the system and make sure that that's even more fair. So it's developed into quite a neutral body of people that really make sure and investigate the people that want to be on the court. Mm-hmm. So once you get through that rigorous process and the names go up, then the governor would have an opportunity to appoint.
Your research shows in the Votes in Your Court program, we'll get into that.
Yes, sir.
But your research shows that, is it 90% of people don't know that they have the power to participate in this retention process?
I think that's a fair statement. Based on some of the polling, that people essentially didn't know about this process. And that's why the Florida Bar has taken such an interest in making sure voters know about the system. It's important to understand that, Florida Bar is a mandatory bar, meaning that if you want to practice law in Florida, you have to be a member of the Florida Bar. They license you and you must pay dues to them. So as a result, people from all walks of life and all parts of the profession are members of the bar. Republican, Democrat, nonpartisan, all together are members. The bar itself, because it is that type of a mandatory bar, can't take a position on whether or not you should do a vote which way. Mm-hmm. We can't say we want you to do this or we want you to do that. What is so important, though, to the members of the Board of Governors and also just lawyers in general is to make sure that people understand the process, understanding what it is that goes into this system so that when they go to the polls, they're making an informed decision. To me, there's nothing worse than just going in and saying, well, I like the way that person's name looks, versus the other one or whatever on any election. It's important because you need to understand what you're doing. Ultimately, no one can control what a voter is going to do. But from the bar's perspective, we need to make sure that at least the information was there for them if they wanted to become informed.
And you guys go about that by surveying your members and making that information available to the public?
To answer that question, we kind of have to talk about why this is so different than everything else. Going back to the fundamental separation of powers. And, the bar itself has been involved in a civics education type of program, trying to educate folks about how we got here. Going back to the Declaration of Independence and, the Constitutional Convention in Philadelphia, where these people said, we've got to protect against tyranny. Well, how do you do that? Let's separate the powers. We should have a strong executive because we need a leader. And that's going to be your president or your governor. And then we need a branch of government that is separate and distinct that makes the laws, that is the ones that represent your individuals. And then most important, we need to have an independent judiciary that basically is the gatekeeper for those people in power. So you have this separation that keeps us in a democracy. So it's so much different than everything else, like every other political campaign, because this isn't a political campaign. It's a separate branch of government that was designed from the very beginning to be independent, which means that they have – once you become a judge, you're controlled by the code of judicial conduct and the canons. It forbids judges and justices from saying how they'll decide future cases and talking about what went into deciding a case. So it's very difficult for them to – they're really prohibited from talking about why they should stay in, or not. It really comes down to, are they qualified? Are they competent? Do they do a good job? And as you see with the U.S. Supreme Court, justices are on there for a long, long time, and you get a new president and they appoint theirs. And there's a balance there, and it goes back to balancing that power. And so the system works as it is.
But the system has its cracks.
Sure.
It's become politicized, as many things. People and organizations are looking at past decisions and launching campaigns. So what can a justice do in that situation?
We've seen a trend in that where – interest groups will then run a specific campaign against judges or justices. In the federal system, it's appointments for life. So if you get appointed to the United States Supreme Court after the Senate confirms you, you're on. And, there's some famous quotes by I think it was Eisenhower who said that one of the worst things I ever did was appoint Earl Warren to the Supreme Court. You know, but you can't really go back because the whole fundamental principle is separations of power. So you have this this United States Supreme Court that is immune, and they really are immune from political pressures. Why do I bring that up? It's so important because when you get to the state court system, like we have in Florida, mm-hmm. they're up for merit retention, and your greatest fear is that judges are going to make decisions based on what a political pressure might be. So, what do you want? What is the role of a judge? You know, the role of a judge is to decide the law based on prior precedent, decide the law based on what is in front of them, the record on appeal, those sorts of things. And if they make a decision based on that is unpopular, that's our system. We want judges to be independent and immune from the political pressures. What happens in a situation where we have here, and we've seen a new trend where we have groups that are saying, we don't want those judges because we don't agree with how they're deciding a specific case, then all of a sudden now they've had to go down and certify that they have opposition, which is a new thing.
Really?
And it's on the heels of the Iowa situation. I don't know if you know about that.
Please inform us.
In Iowa, a couple years back, there was a similar system in place where judges or justices on their Supreme Court had made a decision that a certain group found unpopular. I think it had something to do with civil contracts for marriage, something like that, where, you know, can you get married between partners and that sort of thing. Now, obviously, a very heated issue. But again, those justices ruled based on what they felt was the law in front of them. Then they got voted out of office. So what happens when you have judges or justices that are fearful of making a decision based on the law if it's going to be unpopular? Then all of a sudden, the pocketbook and the political campaigns that we were trying to avoid from back in the early 70s when there was corruption on the court, that's the fear. You want to have an independent judiciary that looks at the law and does what they think the law and the Constitution mandate, and not be thinking in the back of their head, well, if I do this, someone's coming after me. The fundamental reason we have the separation of powers is to keep them independent. And that's what we have in the federal system. There's no merit retention. It's a lifetime appointment. So they have that's insulation. We don't have that here. So what we have to do in our opinion, obviously, is we have a merit retention system in place here in Florida, and the voters clearly have an opportunity to weigh in on whether a judge or justice is qualified or competent to sit. But we want to make sure that the people out there are not basing that solely on anything that might – an unpopular decision, but more on the body of work and the continued competency of a judge or justice.
You're listening to It's About Florida. I'm Tramell Gomes chatting with Sean Desmond, president of the Florida Bar's Young Lawyers Division. The topic is merit retention.
Would you prefer a lifetime appointment over the merit retention process?
You know, going into it, that's kind of a personal question. You know, from my personal opinion, I do believe that having a truly independent judiciary, it should be a lifetime appointment. The reason I feel that way, as I've said here, is because that way you have no fear that judge or justice is ever going to be thinking in the back of their mind that they're going to lose their seat if they make a decision. They become a student and an ambassador for the law. And that's really so important. I think the justices that we have in place and all the judges, unless they've demonstrated something that has shown an incompetency or a corruption like we've dealt with years and years ago, that most of the judges are ambassadors of the law and are students of the law. So, you know, that is really when you have – and even the U.S. Supreme Court, if someone was demonstrating characteristics that were corrupt, you know, I'm a justice and I'm just doing what I want now. Well, the Senate can start impeachment process, and so can we here. Mm-hmm. And, you know, looking at the system that they even get through in the beginning, they go through – every judge of justice goes through a very rigorous screening process. So we're really trying to make sure that that screening process to determine whether or not they were going to be good students and ambassadors of the law wasn't flawed. And that's really what the system is about. So what's happened though is now you've got potential groups coming in, putting lots of money and throwing an unpopular decision and trying to influence that vote when they can't speak out. Mm-hmm. They can't get into, well, I decided this decision because of this. So they're really insulated from being able to advocate for themselves.
We're seeing a lot of that from the different branches of government. Like when a judge makes a decision, they're called an activist judge. Mm-hmm. I've seen that so many times.
Well, you know, I made reference to the statement that President Eisenhower made, I think, years ago when, you know, when Earl Warren was made Chief Justice of the United States Supreme Court. Once he made that decision and couldn't take it back, all of a sudden you had a lot of people saying that some of the decisions that were made were activist decisions. And so we haven't – it's nothing new. We've always – you know, people that aren't happy with a decision oftentimes say, well, that's because they're an activist judge. The bottom line on that is, you know, in my opinion, the way you fix that is not put fear into judges making decisions on the law, but go back to your ballot box and put a different person in the Senate or the governor's office to make a different type of appointment down the road. Because otherwise you get into a situation where your legislature and your governor's office or executive branch is influencing the decisions, and that's not what we set up in the beginning. The, you know, advocating a position but then having someone who's fair, impartial, and neutral that will say, I've heard what you said. I've heard what you said. Here's what the Constitution says. Here's what the laws say. And I interpret it this way. As long as they do that competently, and it's if it's an unpopular decision, the beauty of our country is we accept it.
But we're not seeing it that way. We're seeing the influencing and the screaming match and all of that stuff after decisions are made.
Well, and to be fair, that's a good point. And I think that's the reason we're having this conversation, because we've seen that now and we've seen that trend where folks, groups are coming and bringing lots of money to influence an election. And while we can't say you should vote yes or no, what we can do is say, before you make your decision, let's tell you about this system. Let's tell you why it was put in place. Let's tell you the history of it. Explain again the separation of powers and why it's so critical to have an independent judiciary. Let the folks go and look at the track record of a judge or justice, determine if they believe that they have done a competent job that they were asked to do on their body of work, and then decide whether the judicial nominating committee that put them up to the governor in the first place was right or wrong, not we don't like your decision, we're going to kick you out, because then I think the political pressures start to weigh in and we see a crumbling of that fundamental principle.
So the power is in the hands of the people,
mm-hmm.
but there's a lot of information to go through. And according to that research, 90% of these voters don't even participate in the retention process. What can be done, or why aren't they paying attention? What do you think is the problem?
Well, I have a little bit of experience with this because I ran for judge here in Leon County in 2008. And, you know, the big thing we always worried about was by the time you get to the bottom of the ballot, do you care anymore? Are people – and you look at the numbers and you'd see the votes that were cast at the top of the ballot for the presidential election, the United States presidential election. The people that came to the polls that actually got all the way down the ballot and voted on the bottom people was significantly dropped off. Why? Well, you know, I don't know anything about these people below. I don't know who's up for county commission seat 5 or county judge seat 4. I don't know enough about them, but I sure do know a lot about Barack Obama and John McCain because it's out there. So that's a phenomenon that already is an issue. And now you see that, well, okay, well, we're going to come spend a bunch of money and try to influence you to vote no or vote yes. Like I said, the bar isn't saying vote no or vote yes. We just want to make sure that you have an opportunity to know about what you're voting on.
How will you guys go up against the juggernaut of the massive campaigns and all of that money to really get the attention of the public, as you see in the presidential races, to even get down to the lower races?
It's a challenge. I mean, I would think, and I have seen already, that the legal profession in general from around the state has responded. You know, anyone who is a student of the law, who respects our system, I think we've seen a lot of people getting into this. You know, it hasn't been a threat before, I guess, is the real question. You know, we hadn't seen an Iowa situation occur. So now we're on notice that our you know, judiciary could be under attack. So I think the legal profession is going around and they're independently raising money to make sure that people are informed. The bar itself is doing its education program. That's not to say there aren't other groups of lawyers out there that are going to take a position. You know, there's groups out there like Democracy at Stake and things like that that will take those type of positions. But the bar doesn't weigh in on that either way. So I think that how do we go against that? I think once you start – it's interesting. Once you start talking to people about it and you talk about the fundamental separation of powers and why it's so important to have a fair judge, anyone who's been in a courtroom who goes in there and stands in front of a court or a judge and has a feeling like it's already been decided, mm-hmm. walks away feeling, you know, wronged. There's nothing worse than having a judge that you don't trust is neutral. And when you go and compare that with the adverse or the inverse of that, when you have a judge you know is giving you a fair shake, that is listening to everything, even if the decision is contrary to your own wishes, you still feel like the system treated you fair. And I think that, you know, that's really what's at stake, is making sure that people know what they're voting on.
I trust that those listening will take an interest, hopefully, and check out the justices and judges on the merit retention ballot. But what do you think in helping? We always like to get a second opinion or ask a buddy or a family member like, hey, what do you think about this? Should I vote this way or that way? Fred Lewis, Barbara Perriente, and Peggy Quince, the Supreme Court justices up for merit retention. Would you say they have been doing a good job so far?
Well, I think that the key is to go and look at their body of work. You know, there's complete records of these justices' opinions. And might add, there's 15 judges of the appellate courts that are also up for merit retention that have a body of work as well. And the Florida Bar's website, which is www.floridabar.org/thevotesinyourcourt, all one word, will have that sort of information to go and see, well, what kind of decisions has Justice Lewis rendered? What kind of decisions has Justice Perriente rendered or Quince? And then you make a decision based on whether or not you think they've done a competent job. It's one thing if you go on and see an opinion that just says, you know, I hear everything you said, but I just don't – I want to do it my way versus – let me first go through the analysis of the decisions that have dealt with this issue over the last 45, 50 years. Here's why the precedent says this. All of a sudden, you start to see that a lot of times the judges or justices are pretty well reasoned. It's not to say that different judges or justices can't come to a different conclusion, but as long as that dedication to the study of law and the respect for the law is adhered to, then, you know, they're probably – the folks that are engaging that behavior are going to be deemed competent. So I think you'd have to go through that analysis and look at the body of the work. And I think all three of the ones up right now have been on for a while.
Yeah.
So
in your professional opinion, no overt misconduct that sticks out?
Let's look at that too. I mean, the question is often made, well, you know, we haven't had someone be removed through merit retention. That's always, well, it doesn't work. Why, you know, if no one's been removed, clearly the system doesn't work. You know, that's probably because we have a Judicial Qualifications Commission and an impeachment procedure with the legislature. But more – you don't see impeachment that much. But you see the JQC taking action all the time. The JQC is the body or the commission that exists that will actually file complaints against sitting judges or justices who have engaged in activity that is deemed inappropriate. And we've had it. There are pending cases in front of the JQC right now, and we've seen it in the last few years when you've had a judge that has done something that has been contrary to the canons, contrary to how they're supposed to behave, not dealing necessarily with decision-making and the study of the law, but how they're behaving kind of off the court and engaging in things that people go, well, that's not how a judge should behave. The JQC steps in and brings that procedure, and there's a legal procedure that goes on where people make argument. The judge or justice comes in with a lawyer and sits in front of the – and there's a special prosecutor and there's a body that listens and makes a recommendation based on what they've heard, and then they go forward. So it's part of the reason why the voters haven't had to step in is because we've had a JQC that's been watching closely to make sure that we don't have bad actors out there.
All right. So we have three justices standing for merit retention in 2012 and several on the appellate level going through the merit retention process from the 1st through the 5th District Court of Appeals. What would you like to let our listeners know and to spur participation on that lower end of the ballot?
With everything that is going to be happening, I think voters are going to be a little more informed than they normally have been in the past. With this, the Florida Bar's education program, that is going to be out there. So, you know, there have been press conferences and meetings like this. And but the – and I also know that the justices are going to – you know, they're in the newspaper more. So it's – I think that the phenomenon of the down at the bottom of the ballot not seeing it is less of a problem because of how politicized and publicized it is now. But for those who just – you know, aren't really, really up on it, and you know, a lot of people are busy, you know, that don't get into this. I think that ultimately our goal is to make sure that there's an avenue where they can go. So we say go to the Florida Bar, the votes in your court, and see and learn more.
All right.
That's kind of where we hope folks will go to see.
Yeah, and understanding like the restrictions on judges of what they can and can't do during a campaign season is totally different as to why you can't hear from them.
Well, yeah, because if you're a – let's just say you're a Republican senator and you draw an opposition opponent for your seat who is a Democrat, there are going to be debates. They're going to be televised. They're going to be town hall meetings where you go and have a conversation and someone from the audience says, we don't like this particular, you know, proposal. And one candidate's going to get up and say, well, here's why I think this is going to create jobs. This is going to do this. It's going to do this. It's going to make you better versus the other side of the component saying we think this, this, and that. You don't have that here. All you have is a judge or justice that can't say anything.
All right. Well, thank you so much for taking time out of your schedule to join us here on It's About Florida.
Thank you very much for having me.
Thank you to our guest, Sean Desmond with the Florida Bar. You've been listening to It's About Florida, a production of WFSU-FM. Our senior producer is Regan McCarthy with technical assistance provided by Taylor Cox. Please join us again next week for more discussions about the issues impacting our state. I'm Tramell Gomes.